God has a plan for our lives, and these plans of God, they're revealed as we walk through life and revealed in due season. Listen to what the word of the Lord has to say, starting with verse 7 of Galatians chapter 6. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. But he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. And let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season, there it is, we shall reap if we faint not. Look at that verse one more time. And let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. The NIV reads this way. Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. The Apostle Paul, he has much to say about this phrase, due season. You see, it describes God's perfect timing in each and every one of our lives. It speaks of an exact and guided moment where nothing is left to random chance. The Bible declares that God sends the rain, the crops, and harvest all in due season. When we think about seasons, we may think about spring and summer, fall and winter. Each one of these seasons indeed have their own unique characteristics. We know that springtime is the time for planting, summer is the time for growth, fall is the time for harvesting, and winter time comes after the four. So we find then that there is summer, there's fall, there's winter, back to spring again, and each one of them have their own characteristic. Now in Wisconsin, it's normal for us to be planting not during, you know, the winter months of January, February, or March, but rather we plant generally during the summertime and the springtime, and we realize that a harvest is not going to be gathered in the month of April. We don't go out to our apple trees during February and expect to find an apple, because we know the seasons of life and the seasons of time. Now, the Bible tells us that there was nothing helter-skelter then about the birth of Jesus Christ. His birth was planned and executed with absolute heavenly precision. Jesus was not born a year early, nor was he born a day late. The Bible tells us he was born in perfect season, in due season. Listen to what the Apostle Paul says in Galatians 4 and verse 4. He says, but when the time came, or right time came, God sent his son, born of a woman, subject to the law. Notice there, the right time came, God sent his son. The timing of Jesus, his birth, his triumphal entry into the city of Jerusalem, which we will celebrate next Sunday and Palm Sunday, followed by his arrest in the Garden of Gethsemane, his crucifixion on a cross of Calvary, his resurrection 3 days later, all took place with precise timing, everything in due season. And friends, I would declare to you this morning, so will it be when Christ returns once again to this earth in power and great glory. He is going to return in God's perfect timing, not a minute early and not a millisecond late. It will be according to God's eternal plan. Now, friends, we must all understand this morning that there is a divine plan that's being worked out in each and every one of our lives as well. It is a God plan. It is a good plan. Each piece fitting together like a puzzle, all coming together in due season. One day, this journey of life with all of its twists and its turns, questions and sometimes heartaches are all going to make perfect sense, but it'll only be in due season. It's in those kinds of moments when life seems uncertain and it seems as though the season that you're in is never going to change. It's in those moments I encourage you to hold on to Jeremiah chapter 29 and verse 11, it says, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." It's all in due season. I want you to consider with me this morning for just the next few moments the three seasons of Moses' life. Out of all the Bible characters, Moses is one of my absolute most favorite. And you'll discover that the life of Moses is a 120-year lifespan, but it's comprised of three unique seasons of time. Someone has described it this way: 40 years in the palace of Egypt, becoming something. It was a time of education. And then it was 40 years in the wilderness, becoming nothing, realizing how much he needed God. And the 40 years that follow after that is the 40 years of leading the Israelites out of Egypt into the promised land. During his 40 years in the palace, Moses enjoyed the very best the world had to offer. It was a fantastic time in world history. Living in the household of Pharaoh, Moses enjoyed palatial accommodations. He lived in the lap of luxury. He was surrounded daily by servants that were attending to his every need, and not only need, but desire. Moses enjoyed the finest foods and the delicacies that were only found in a palace, and this palace in Egypt. His clothing was the clothing of royalty. Growing up in the palace, he received a world-renowned and a world-class education. Like most of his day, most would only long for such an education. This was the education afforded to Moses. It was in the palace then, it was in this setting that we just talked about, that Moses learned the leadership skills that ultimately would be necessary so that he could fulfill God's plan for his life. You see, everything in Moses' life is happening like clockwork. It's all in due season. One day, as you know the story of Moses, he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew slave. He was incensed by such cruelty, and Moses took things into his own hands. He began to beat that Egyptian slave master. He beat him, actually, to death. Realizing that he had killed this man, he buried him in the sand and covered him up. Pharaoh, however, found out about Moses and about him murdering this slave master. And Moses now finds himself on the run. He is fearing, the Bible says, Pharaoh's wrath. And for the next 40 years of Moses' life, he is on the backside of the desert herding his father-in-law's sheep. I find it interesting that the Bible calls it the backside of the desert. A few years ago, I drove from Tel Aviv all the way down through the Sinai, this very desert. And passing through this desert, there's absolutely not one single plant that is green. The roads are covered by sands, and the sands are blowing. What a hostile environment. And so we find Moses, the one that had been living in the palace, now in this next 40 years of his life, he is on the backside of the desert. And what is he doing out there? God has placed him there so that he might learn the art of desert survival. Gone are the niceties of life. Now a crude hand-sewn tent is all that he has for a palace. Whenever you find Moses, you'll find Moses out there on the backside of the desert. He's got a lot of questions, and we'll talk about some of those questions in a moment. However, he is scrounging now for food, and whatever he can find becomes his meal. Gone are the servants. He is now guarding sheep. And I'm sure that during this time, Moses must have had some heated conversations with God. How many have ever had a heated conversation with God? Let me tell you, when I'm all done with my heated conversations, God always wins. But nonetheless, we try, and so did Moses. And I'm sure on the backside of the desert there, Moses, which was known for having a hot temper anyway, I'm sure he says, "Why, God? Why have I been forced out of the palace? Why am I living out here? This is totally unfair. I was only defending one of your chosen people, and this is the thanks that I get? I was groomed for leadership. I'm overqualified for this sheep thing. Where are you at, God? And why have you abandoned me?" Moses' questions will all be answered, but only in due season. Because the next 40 years of Moses' life will be spent leading 1.5 million persons through the most treacherous wilderness on planet Earth. This is a job for someone who has been trained to lead, like a king or someone that would have been a pharaoh. This job of leading this 1.5 million Israelites through this wilderness is not a job for a city slicker. It's not one for a person with uncalloused hands. This man must know the ropes of desert survival. This man that's going to lead the children of Israel must know the backside of the desert like he knows the backside of his own hand. This man must have a powerful, life-changing, burning bush encounter with God so that he will never, ever doubt the fact that God had commissioned him and that God had called him. This man, when he's out in the midst of this wild wilderness, trying to lead a group of stiff-necked people, the Bible says, he must personally know the great I am. And so God has him in what I would call the wilderness as another time of training in his life. In due season, at the right moment, Moses is going to understand, at least in part, the plan of God and why he was in the palace and why God allowed him to go out into the wilderness. It is all part of God's plan for his life, but he will not understand it all until the due season. You know, in many ways, as you read through the Old Testament, you'll find that the life of Joseph of the Old Testament mirrors much of the life of Moses. Consider the seasons of Joseph's life for a moment. You know, Joseph, we all know his story. He was the best loved and favored son of Jacob. Remember, he was raised on a farm with his 11 brothers in the land of Canaan. Joseph was given the chieftain's coat of many colors. You know, we've all seen the musical or we've read the story of Joseph over and over, and we know this coat of many colors. But what you may not remember about that account is the coat of many colors was really called the chieftain's coat. It was not just a unique garment. This garment, whoever wore it, was recognized as being next in leadership in the family. Now that should have gone to Reuben. Reuben should have been the one that was next in line to become the head of the clan at the death of his father Jacob. And so when this coat of many colors was given to Joseph, realizing it jumped over 10 others in the age line of the family, you'll discover that Joseph then is hated by his brothers because of that. He has some dreams. He tells his brothers his dreams. You know the whole story. But one day, out of jealousy, his brothers sold him as a slave, ultimately ending up in the household of Potiphar. Now listen to this. Potiphar just happens once again to be an official in the courts of Pharaoh in Egypt. It looks as though God is up to something once again, something that's big. God has a big plan, and God is using this life and is going to use his life in a phenomenal way, this young man called Joseph. Falsely accused by Potiphar's wife of attempted rape, Joseph is sent to prison where he will spend the next number of years. Most theologians believe that he was in prison anywhere between 3 years and 9 years of time. This too, even his time in prison, is going to play an important part of God's divine plan for Joseph's life. You see, while in prison, he becomes second in command of all the prisoners, and he interprets the dreams of two men, one the cupbearer and the other the chief baker. You know the account and the story. Later, Pharaoh has a dream as well. And this troubling dream is a dream where he sees seven fat cows eaten by seven scrawny cows. And it is followed up by another dream, and in this dream he sees seven ears of corn eaten up by seven withered ears of corn. And Pharaoh knew there's something about this dream. There is something prophetic, and there is a meaning hidden in all of this. And he begins to seek out his wise men, but he could find none in all of the land of Egypt that could interpret the dream. And suddenly the cupbearer began to think, I remember when I was in prison, there was this guy by the name of Joseph, and the Spirit of God rests upon him, and he has insight into dreams. And so they call for Joseph. And Joseph has brought him before Pharaoh, and he says to Pharaoh, Pharaoh, here's the meaning of this dream. There is going to be 7 years of plenty. There will be crops that will be bumper crops, and 7 years of good and of plenty, but it's going to be followed up by 7 years where there's going to be a famine. And the 7 bad years are going to eat up and devour the 7 good years of crops that have been stored away. And Pharaoh begins to think about this, and the Spirit of God works in Pharaoh's heart, and Pharaoh makes, just like a miraculous dream coming true for Joseph, like a fairy tale, Joseph is made second in command over all of Egypt. It's all in due season. Joseph, after the years of hardship, is now right where God ultimately wanted him to be, right there in the house of Pharaoh, right there where he can do something about this coming famine on the land. Why? Because God had placed him in a position whereby he would be in place to ultimately preserve the life of his family. Yes, his own brothers had sold him out as a slave. And not only his brothers, but the entire nation of Israel ultimately. In Genesis chapter 15, verse 20, we find these words. He is standing before his brothers that had sold him out. And he says, as for you, you thought evil against me. This was not a plan that was, you know, something that was fostered under goodwill towards me at all. But as for you, you thought evil against me, but God meant it unto what? Say it, church. Unto good. To bring to pass as it is this day to save much people alive. And at this moment, it begins to dawn on Joseph. Raised on a farm? Now it makes sense. He needs to understand agriculture. He needs to understand what it is to preserve harvests and keep them for the coming famine. Raised on a farm? There was no mistake. It was God's plan. And Joseph now begins to understand some of this. Sold as a slave into Egyptian official and into his home? Now it makes sense. His time in prison? It makes sense. It's all in due season. Biblically, as well as secular history, friends, is replete with many examples of God's perfect timing. Queen Esther, the Bible says, she came to the kingdom for such a time as this, to preserve the Jews during the time of Haman's evil plot to annihilate all of the Jews for such a time as this. What about Daniel? Yes, Daniel went through some hard times, the lion's den and the such, but God placed him where he needed him so that he could be where God wanted him, both in government as well as in other lives that he was going to influence. David, John the Baptist, the Apostle Paul, all of their lives, there are moments in their lives they're not sure what's going on, but it all becomes plain in due season. Let me tell you an incredible story of the man by the name of Victor Plymeyer. Victor Plymeyer was a missionary to China in the early 1900s. He faithfully labored there in China for 16 years before he saw his first convert. He didn't throw in the towel. He did not give up. He stayed faithful year after year after year after year until finally he had his first convert and was baptized after 16 years. In the winter of 1927, his son John and wife Grace both died just a week apart from that deadly disease of smallpox. Being a foreigner living in a strange land, he was not allowed to bury his wife and son in a public cemetery. However, he was allowed to purchase a small plot of land to bury his loved ones at the base of a hill just outside of the community. The land was titled not in the name of Plymeyer, but the land was titled in the name of the church he was establishing for the Assemblies of God there in China. To make a long story short, with the rise of communism in the 50s, the missionaries were forced to leave China, and many of the churches were either destroyed or abandoned. Nearly 50 years later, when China began to allow these churches to reopen, they were only allowed to do so if they could prove that they had a presence there in China before 1949. They began to search through the titles and all the documents in Springfield, Missouri. And as they began to do so, they discovered a title to two grave plots there in China, one for John and one for Grace Plymeyer. This title became the proof of ownership of a bit of land there in China prior to 1949, and also it recognized a ministry presence in that the title was not to Plymeyer, but to the Assemblies of God and to that church. Because of that, the Chinese government allowed this church once again to reopen, and today it's a vibrant living church. And it all happened because someone gave their very best. Someone that did not understand all the twists and turns of life. Someone that I'm sure questioned God. God, I've left my family, I've left my home, I've left everything. I've come into the frozen tundra here of China. I've come to this place near the lands of Tibet. And I've given my best. Now I've buried my wife and I've buried my son. And they will not even have the decency to let me bury them in one of the recognized cemeteries. A lot of questions could have gone through Plymeyer's mind. But as he kept on being faithful to God, in due season, it all makes sense. I think of another man by the name of Dave Reaver. Some of you know Dave Reaver, you know his name. Dave Reaver was in Vietnam as a veteran. He was critically injured as a phosphorus grenade that he was ready to throw into a Viet Cong bunker exploded in his hand. This explosion of this phosphorus grenade burned away 60% of his flesh. Burned off and blew off 60% of his body. Today, Dave Reaver, having spent 8 months in intensive care, having gone through dozens of surgeries, he now crisscrosses all around the world, sharing at military bases. And he reminds those soldiers time and time again, "My scars may be external, but yours may be internal." And that the God that I serve and the God that watched over me, even though 60% of my body and I've had all these surgeries, even though I've gone through so much, it all makes sense now. David says so often, he says, "My scars have become the license by which God has allowed me to speak into the lives of millions of soldiers all around the world. It's all in due season. Friends, I want you to understand this morning, with God, nothing is wasted. There is no pain, there is no trial, there is no success, there is no failure that is ever going to be wasted with God. And you look at your life this morning, you say, the mess that I have, and the places I have been, and the hardships I've endured, and the failures I've had, there is no hope for my life. Friend, I want you to understand, in due season, you will understand all the twists and the turns, and you will see that God was never, ever abandoning you along the journey of life. He's always been with you, and God is working the big plan today. And I want you to understand, that's right. He is working the big plan in your life today. A plan like Moses, a plan like Joseph, a plan like Victor Plymire, a plan like Dave Reaver. There's a plan that God is working in your life. You may look at your life and say, well, all it is just kind of a mess. And it's, you look at your life as though it was in a basket. And you say, what could ever come of this? Friend, I want you to know there's nothing that's ever happened in your life. There's nothing that's happening today in your life that God will not take and write it into the script. It's already there of your life. And you'll look back one day and you'll say, I know my Redeemer lives. I know that He is good. And I know that His plans are trustworthy. And though I may not see them at the moment, I know in due season, in the proper time, if I don't throw in the towel, if I don't give up, God will show me the very purposes for my life. Some of you, you know from my past, I was raised in a family that was a business family. There are times I wondered, you know, when others were out playing ball, and this is the things that went through my mind. I started working full-time when I was in the fourth grade. Now, it's not a sad story I'm trying to give you. I'm just simply saying, I would look and I would see others. They're out playing ball, and they're out going out doing this, that, and the other thing, a lot of fun stuff. And I was in business up to my ears from fourth grade on. By the time I was in high school, I managed Chevrolet Olson Buick Garage, went on to North Central University, and while in college, I managed the world's largest OMC dealership, 7 stores. There are times I'd wonder, God, why is it, you know, that you've got me so busy in the business world? I look back now, after 41 years in ministry, and I say, God, you placed me right where you wanted me to train me for this moment, for this time, for this season. I had a young guy one day bring to me a box. He tried to repair his Yamaha motorcycle. And so in order to do so, he thought the thing to do was just to tear it all apart. So he literally took apart every single piece of the electrical system, the transmission, the engine, and he brought it to me in a box, slid it across the counter. He said, I tried to do it myself. I looked in there and I just saw, I'm hoping all the pieces are still there. One by one, we began to reassemble and put it all back together again. Maybe you feel like you have tried putting your life back together again this morning. You've done your best. You tried to figure it out. You knew something seemed broken. You knew something wasn't quite working right. And you've tried everything to get your life back together again. I tell you, there's a time when you hand it over to God. You say, God, I've done my best, but I can't figure this thing out. And he had tried for weeks and possibly even months to put that thing back together again. He couldn't put it together. I'm simply saying, if you'll bring your broken pieces to God, all of these questions you've got, Lord, why did I have to go through that? You know, some of you, and there's someone even possibly in this room right now, you've been released from a job, and it stings like fire inside of you. It gets you angry. How dare they do such a thing? It is possible that God is putting you from where you were to where he needs you to be for the next level of training for your life. Don't give up. The Bible says, in due season, we will reap if we faint not. That simply means if you don't give up, throw in the towel, call it quits. If you stay faithful to God, God will stay faithful to you, and he will see you through. Now, Lord, this morning, we pause for a moment in this service for the God moment. For the moments, Lord, that only you can perform. And that is to touch a life. Lord, you may have given skills and abilities to men and women to be able to put a torn motorcycle back together again, but it's quite something else, a torn life. Only you can do that. And Lord, men and women have come through these doors today, and they would give testimony of the fact everything seems to have fallen apart. And I'm sure that Moses thought that. I'm sure Joseph thought that. I'm sure Victor Plymire felt that. I'm sure that Dave Reaver felt that. Everything's fallen apart. Everything's been blown to pieces. But God was present. And in due season, it all makes sense. Father, I pray for those that are on the backside of the desert for the moment. Lord, they feel like everyone's kind of abandoned them and they're overqualified for what they're doing. But you are working all things together for their good.